Cup of Care, a podcast series about Canadian family caregivers, their diversity, their roles, their experiences, and what they've learned that might help each of us see care in a new way. In this show, we keep things grounded in real experience and remember that those experiences are unique from one person to another. In each episode, we'll meet a new family caregiver and chat with them over a cuppa.
Welcome to the Family Caregiving Series. My name is Sibtain, and I've just completed my undergraduate degree in physiology and pharmacology. I'm trying to pursue a career in healthcare, and I have a unique interest in the different perspectives of healthcare and what they may look like for different people.
And I'm Catherine, but everyone calls me Katie. I'm a PhD student in psychology with many interests focused around people's lived experience of significant transitions. I'm passionate about learning from older adults and their families, be that through my research or volunteer work. In this episode, we will be recapping the series. We'll be talking with each other about how working on this project has influenced us.
So we've talked to several family caregivers over the series, and I think I've learned a lot from them.
One key area that I noticed in family caregiver stories was this idea of the care recipient having autonomy or control. Family caregivers seem to try and allow care recipients to be in control as much as possible.
I noticed that family caregivers were committed to the role of caregiving, and that commitment shined through, I think, in all of their stories.
I also really appreciated the diversity of family caregiving stories we've heard. Though I can see some similarities between family caregivers' experience, I also see a lot of uniqueness and a lot of space where family caregivers have been creative, and I found that very interesting.
Okay, well, I can't wait to talk more about these ideas of autonomy, commitment, and diversity, so let's get right into it. I guess I might have assumed that for people who need caregiving support, it could feel like something that limits your personal freedom. But having done these interviews, I think it's helped me to think a little differently about it.
Sometimes I think we get really caught up in this idea that we must be fiercely independent, but we all need support to some degree at some points in time. And we kind of live on a continuum of autonomy. Sometimes we're able to be more autonomous. Other times we're relying more on others. One of the things I noticed was this sense from caregivers that their goal is to help the care recipient live with as much autonomy as they possibly can. One of the more interesting interviews that we did involved Kaylee and Krista, because it was the only opportunity we had where we could talk to both caregiver and care recipient. And autonomy played an interesting role in that interview when Kaylee explained that because she can guide her own care, it gave her the ability to choose a caregiver that met her psychosocial needs. Even though Krista isn't medically trained, Kaylee could guide her through the medical pieces of her care, and Kaylee could have a family caregiver and a caregiver that she was most comfortable with.
I especially liked your point of you don't always have to be fiercely independent to be successful, right? It's always okay to ask for help and to be clear in exactly how you want that help to. The way I've learned about autonomy has been primarily through like a healthcare lens. It's really about empowering the patient. As we age, unfortunately, in specific conditions like dementia or Alzheimer's, we have to start considering, is the person that I'm giving care for truly going to be able to make responsible decisions? And so I think a lot of responsibility goes on those caregivers to make those right decisions. But like you mentioned, at every step of the way from the interviews we've heard, they've tried to honor that idea of autonomy, even if they think that the person who they're giving care for may not be able to make those decisions. They've tried their best to involve them in those decisions. And I think that's really important.
How does that person feel? Do they feel as though they have autonomy in this situation? Because if they do, then for their purposes, they do. And if they feel as though they don't have autonomy, then they don't, even if maybe they from the outside look like they do.
I think we can agree. Autonomy is important, but from the interviews we've heard, so is having open and honest conversation about what each other's wishes are, because it makes those decisions made by the caregiver a little easier, knowing that they have input from the person they're making those decisions for.
What word or words would you use to describe how caregivers took on their role?
The words that immediately come to mind would be things like duty, obligation, responsibility. I think these words are relatively accurate based on some of the conversations we had with our interviewees. I remember people like Sheila, for example, when the time came for her to be a caregiver, she didn't really see it as being separate from a mother. She didn't see it separate as from being a professional because she had had some experience in caregiving in the past. It was kind of just a continuation of what she was already doing. It was simply an evolution of the type of love or care that she had for her son. So although duty, yes, obligation, responsibility, I think are still accurate in terms of some words that describe how caregivers take on the role. But I do think it's kind of a step ahead of that or a step even deeper. I think it really encompasses the emotional aspect of that care too. I think it's more holistic and integrative. It's not just one role that you perform. It's not just an obligation you have. I think it really does become a part of your identity. And going back to the example of Sheila, I remember asking whether being a caregiver had any conflicts with her as a professional, or did it have any distinction from her being a mother? And I remember her answer was, no, it didn't really feel like it was a separate entity. It didn't feel like it was something she had to do or something that like, oh, I've kind of been assigned this duty now. Like, this is something I also have to fulfill. It was really just an extension of what she was already doing. It was an extension of her love for her son, I think. And so for me, one word that describes this really well isn't even in the English dictionary. It's an Urdu word called faraz. And in our language, it's the direct translation still means obligation or duty or something that you have to do. But culturally, I think the word also encompasses a lot more love and a lot more compassion and a sense of honor for when you do something. Like in our culture, when our parents eventually do get older, usually they stay with any child that's more available or I think more suitable to take care of them. And that's called faraz. You have to take care of your parents. But it doesn't just mean obligation or duty. It means compassion. It means love. It means an extension of your love for what you had before, kind of carrying over into now. So I think that word does a really good job of kind of describing what some of these caregiver interviews didn't describe through direct or literal terms, but just the idea or the sense that I got listening to them. I think it really encompassed a whole lot more than just a job that you have to do.
One of the things I did notice was that most of the caregivers we talked to kind of described themselves as being the best person for the job. They had this sort of recognition that they were the best person to provide this care. So they were going to do it because it was within the realm of what they could do. But we've seen kind of gradients of this with different interviews. Sometimes there was this like moment of realizing that this needs to happen, that I'm the best person to provide care. I think about Daryl and him telling the story of being in the parking lot of the doctor's office and seeing his mom dressed in a disheveled manner and going, somebody needs to be stepping up and providing more support. And realistically, at this moment in time, I'm the best person to do that. And so you see that sort of moment. But I think for most caregivers, there isn't that sort of one moment. Instead, it's just sort of a gradual realization that your life circumstances and everything you've done to this point lead you to this place of being the best person to provide this support or care. I think about Suzanne and how just all of the different pieces of her life and her situation came together in such a way that she was the best person to provide care to her parents. And it was literally a whole bunch of different pieces of this puzzle that came together to make that the case.
What have these interviews taught you about the diversity in caregiving?
Every caregiver filters caregiving through their own sets of lenses. And so as a result, every caregiver is going to interact with caregiving differently. No two stories we heard were the same. I'm thinking about Marlene, her sense of what caregiving means, and the transitions and shifts of her experience of caregiving look very different than somebody who's living in the same city and has been throughout the entirety of the caregiving journey. We talked earlier about Sheila and how Sheila sees caregiving as part of her role as mother. I think about Daryl talking about bringing in professional caregivers to do certain tasks with his mom. Rena's story is unique as well because Rena doesn't have a biological relationship with her friend. We talked to six people with six very unique stories.
Being a caregiver, it has to be a diverse experience because people are inherently different. Not only does it matter about the life of the caregiver and how they're able to manage all those responsibilities, but it also depends on the person they're giving care for, what their needs are, what their wishes are, what quality of life looks like to them.
Family caregivers have flexibility to say, okay, this is how I can provide care, and this is how the person wants to receive care. And I can meld those two things together in a way that works well for both of us. And that's how I'm going to go about being a caregiver. And that is one of the neatest things talking to family caregivers is watching how they do that, watching how creative the act of caregiving actually is. So it's thinking about, well, what creative ways can we go about solving whatever problem happens to be in front of us?
Being a caregiver, I don't think it's going to drastically change you as a person or the things that you do. A lot of the caregivers we talked to throughout this podcast were professionals when they took on the role of being a caregiver, and a lot of them still continue those same jobs, still have those same professions. And I think that also speaks to this idea of diversity. What you're doing in your life, what kind of person you are, what goals you have are still going to be with you, but they're just going to perhaps shape how you provide care a little bit differently for each person. Each person has unique needs. They have unique goals. They adapt and integrate caregiving into what they're already doing and who they already are.
We made diversity sort of a highlight of this project. It was something that we really wanted to embrace in the project. And it made each interview a unique experience, which was really fun to walk into each interview and not really have any idea what kind of information or what people were going to tell us. That was actually part of the fun of this project. I've heard people talk about the challenges and joys together, and you can't really separate one from the other. And sometimes they were saying them in the same sentence. So as a result, I come out of it with a greater recognition that we need to understand and to provide space for both the challenging situations and the positive situations. And we need to see them as being hand in hand because family caregivers experience both. I'm grateful to have learned what questions I should ask and how to set people up to tell their stories. That is something I can use in my professional work, and it's also something I can use in my own personal life.
I want to take these stories and experiences that these caregivers have so graciously given us as an indicator of where our healthcare system is today, but also where it needs to go. I myself aspire to become a healthcare professional. A lot of the stories that I heard have really helped me understand how I want myself to be as a care provider, but I also how I want other care providers to be in our healthcare system today. If you are simply just treating as many patients as possible, they're coming in, you give them a treatment, you send them out, and you don't really get to fully understand why they're there or why they need that treatment or other aspects of their life that may be interfering with their treatment, well then, the likelihood is that they'll probably just come back. Creating those meaningful and trusting relationships, I think, also go to enrich those treatments. I still think that we have some work to do in terms of quality of life, those small little things that you don't always notice that can have a huge impact on the mood of a patient, which, let's face it, also has a big impact on their health. And so medical care and treatment is incredibly important, but so is quality of life. There's definitely a lot to learn from these stories in terms of just how important of quality of life can be. And if you can improve somebody's quality of life, I think that can also do wonders for their health.
Thank you, Sibtain, for being part of what has been a really rewarding project.
It was an amazing experience and couldn't have asked for a better running mate. And so that concludes our final episode of Cup of Care. I would like to extend one final thank you to all the caregivers who made this series possible with their unique and valuable stories. I hope that our listeners learned something new and gained a new appreciation for the work family caregivers do. Thank you for listening and goodbye. This series is produced in collaboration with creative partners from the Strengthening of Palliative Approach and Long-Term Care team and Saskatchewan Long-Term Care Network. Advisory support for this project was provided by Dr. Natasha Hubbard-Murdoch from Saskatchewan Polytechnic and Dr. Paulette Hunter from St. Thomas More College. Technical support was provided by Media Production Specialist Greg Olson from Audio Visual Services at Saskatchewan Polytechnic. In addition to Saskatchewan Polytechnic's financial contribution, production of this podcast has been made possible through a financial contribution from Health Canada. The views expressed herein do not necessarily represent the views of Health Canada. Lastly, as with many things in life, this project would not have been possible without the direct contribution of family caregivers.